If you have a Bible with you, if you'd like to turn to Ruth chapter 1. Last week we started our new Sunday morning series on the book of Ruth. And we thought about W5 in Belfast, that place where you can go to explore science and technology and everything else. And it's called W5 because there's those five W words that we use to explore and understand things. And we used them to introduce the book of Ruth to us last Sunday morning. And we had the who, we had the when and the where and the who and the what and the why of the book of Ruth to set the scene as we'll spend Sunday mornings working through it. We thought about the when, that the book of Ruth happens during the days when the judges rule, during the time of the book of Judges, in this continual cycle of disobedience from God, and then God would give them over to their enemies, and then they'd cry out to God, God would raise up a judge to save them, and then of course once the judge died, back to disobedience again, and the cycle went on and on. We thought about the where, and we saw the two places that are mentioned here, Bethlehem and Moab. And we thought about some of the depravity and the darkness that was happening in Israel and happening to people from Bethlehem at the time of the judges. And we also explored where Moab was and what Moab was. They were an enemy nation of God's people. They were a pagan nation. And then we thought about the who. And we were introduced to a family, to the head of the house, Elimelech, whose name meant God is my king. And we thought about how names so often present character in the Old Testament. And we assumed that this is a godly family. We thought about the what. And we introduced briefly that the three men of this family unit die in Moab. That this is a story of personal tragedy in one family. And then we thought about the why. The why. Why is this one family's story of suffering in the Bible? And it's there because it's used in God's redemptive plan to give Israel a king and us ultimately a savior. The point of the book of Ruth is to show us how Israel got its king. And that's what we thought about last week. And this week we're going to start getting into the narrative as this book begins, unfolding these tragic events which plunge one family and one woman particularly into a place of terrible loss and grief. And this woman is left asking God why. She's left angry, she's left bitter at the circumstances in her life, and she cannot understand what God is doing. As we read this chapter, part of this chapter this morning, as we think of Naomi, we can relate to her, can't we? That can be our experience in tragedy. When one thing hits us one after the other, we have the same questions, the same emotions that Naomi can have. So let's read verses 1 to 5 of Ruth 1, and then we're going to skip down to verse 19 of chapter 1 and read from 19 to 22. So firstly, Ruth 1, verses 1 to 5. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. And they went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. And both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Come on down to verse 19 and we'll read verse 19 to 22. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" And she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. And we end our reading there. If you'd like to turn back to Ruth chapter 1 again, and we're going to spend some time just looking at these verses that we've read this morning. And many of us in this room can testify to seasons of loss, seasons of suffering in their lives. And sometimes when we start a series like this, it brings it home to us, times when we've just felt that real suffering and loss of living in a broken world. And as I began to prepare this sermon series, it brought me back to a time in Janice and I's lives where we went through that season. My wife Janice and I met on a Baptist youth summer team in 2015, and we started going out not long after that. And it was during those early months of dating, a number of major things, major losses or suffering happened in our lives at that time. I lived with my sister, Rebecca. I'd lived with her for about 5 years, and she'd been helping out in our holiday Bible club up at Great Victoria Street. And afterwards, she got quite sick, and she thought she just had a bad bout of food poisoning. And it seemed to pass for a couple of weeks, and then it was back again, and it kept recurring. And I went off on holiday to Spain. And it was while I was there, I got a phone call to say how ill my sister was, that she was in hospital, that sickness and pain was back, and tests had shown that she had an aggressive tumor. And she went for major emergency surgery, and then in her late 20s, started intensive chemotherapy for 6 months. And our family were plunged into what was going to happen. Why is this happening? Someone so young, someone who was faithful to God, who served God. A couple of months after Rebecca's surgery, my grandmother passed away, the third grandparent to slowly succumb to Alzheimer's and dementia. Another loss in the family. And the night before my grandmother's funeral, Janice phoned me late one night with some terrible news. And she, along with her mother and her sister, had gone out, as they usually did, to GB to help. It was just a normal evening. And yet they returned home to find that their father had taken a heart attack and was gone with no warning, age 59. And their whole world was turned upside down in an instant. And the questions were there. As you get to grips with families, with what is going on, what's going to happen next? It seems to be just one thing after another. What is God doing? There's anger, there's fear, there's distress. And many of you here this morning, you've had those seasons of tragedy. Maybe you're in the middle of one of those seasons right now. And the questions are there. Sometimes we don't like to admit them, but they can be there. Where is God? What is God doing? Why is God doing this to me and my family? And we struggle to find faith in times of famine. But we can be encouraged this morning. That's where we find Naomi. In the midst of her suffering, in suffering that spans decades in her life, she's asking those questions. Did you notice it as we read that second reading this morning at the end of chapter 1? And even before that, in verse 13 that we didn't read, she turns to her daughters-in-law and she says in verse 13, "No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Or verses 20 and 21 of chapter 1, she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? When the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me." We find a woman whose faith is beaten down by the waves of suffering that have come upon her life. A woman who is bitter, a woman who is looking at her circumstances and saying, "Why, God? Why is this happening? There doesn't seem to be no rhyme or reason to this. And to Naomi, the blame lies at one person's door. God's. In Naomi's perspective, it's been God's hand that's been against her. He has dealt bitterly with her. He has brought the calamity upon her. The pleasant one has become the bitter one. What has caused this? What has caused the pleasant one to become the bitter one? And what has caused it is the tragedies in Moab. The tragedy in Moab. Four blows rock this family in Moab, which leaves Naomi in bitterness. And before we get to those four blows, we need to think through the circumstances that took this family from Bethlehem to Moab in the first place. Ruth 1, verse 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab. He and his wife and his two sons. They find themselves as a family in a place of famine. Now, it's so easy to read those words, isn't it? But when you think that through, what is a famine? A famine is where there is no food. The daily essentials of life are not there. And the word land here suggests that this is not just local to the town of Bethlehem. This is a nationwide famine. And if you read through the law in the Old Testament, particularly Deuteronomy, God in his covenant with his people had told them, if you obey me, if you follow me, you'll be provided for. But if you disobey me, the heavens will be shut up against you. And of course, the time of the judges was a time of continual disobedience. We've saw that already, that cycle that keeps going. And yet in the book of Judges, we can't pinpoint, or certainly in my reading, I can't pinpoint a time of famine. And what complicates things even further is the fact that there are times in Scripture when famines seem to hit God's people in the promised land, and the reason given is not because of sin. The narrative is silent when they happened. If you read in Genesis of the lives of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, they all went through times of famine in the promised land. They all left for a period of time to search for food in foreign nations. So this famine, it could have been a judgment from God for the nation of Israel's sin. It most likely may have been. Or it might have been a famine in the mysterious providence of God. We don't know. The narrative of Ruth is silent. It doesn't give us a reason for the famine. It just tells us there was one. So in verse 2, the family move to Moab. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah, and they went into the country of Moab and remained there. Elimelech, Naomi, their two sons, they leave Bethlehem, they move to Moab. And we introduced it last week, but we thought about the importance of names in the Bible. In the Old Testament, their names so often reflected their character. We have Elimelech, God is my king. We have Naomi, which means pleasantness. One of the Bible commentaries says this about names in the Old Testament. It says, in Israel, names were not just labels of individuality, but descriptions of inner character, which in turn were presumed to influence the person's conduct. So it seems to be that this is a godly family. They follow Yahweh. Yahweh is their king. Naomi is someone who is pleasant. She's a glass half full kind of person with an uplifting demeanor. And yet this family move from the promised land, from Bethlehem, from the house of bread, and they go to pagan Moab. And there's a strong argument to be made here that they shouldn't have done this. This family are being disobedient. They're failing to trust God. They're just going their own way. They're just doing their own thing. And I could be convinced by that line of reasoning. But there are just a couple of things that make me hesitant to fully accept that. The first is the author's vagueness. There's no moral pronouncement made on this move. The narrator is deliberately vague. He just sticks to the narrative. He makes no pronouncement whether it was a right move or a wrong move. And the second thing that makes me hesitant is they had precedent for it. They had precedent for it. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had all done the same. They'd all faced a famine in the promised land, and they'd all left for a period of time in search of food. And yes, it often led to problems. Abram and Isaac were foolish in those foreign lands, just like Naomi's sons are foolish in Moab. But if you read Genesis also, they seem to come home blessed, wealthy, when they come back. They move to Moab, and with hindsight, we can see it is a foolish move. They go to escape a famine, and what happens to them? Three of them die in Moab. But I want to stop just short of saying they were disobedient in going to Moab. They're in a situation. They don't know what to do. Moab is probably the closest place with food available, and they go, and it ends in disaster. And we look back in retrospect and it's foolish, but at the time they might have thought they were doing the right thing. We've had those times in life, haven't we? We've made decisions under pressure and we've looked back and we thought they were the best thing at the time, but we look back in the future to see they're foolish and they were wrong. And I'd say the problem with Elimelech and Ruth and the family is not so much that they go to Moab in search of food, but they seem to settle there. They seem to put down roots in Moab. Did you see it as we work through it, the language that's used, the progression in the language? Verse 1, they went to sojourn in the land of Moab. Verse 2, they remained there. Verse 4, they lived there. There's this progression of almost putting down roots in Moab. Time keeps going on. The roots are being put down. It seems like they're not looking to go back to the promised land. They're making Moab into a home. That's where they're going wrong. And as they go to Moab, four blows rock this family. Four tragedies. The first, Elimelech dies. Verse 3. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died. She was left with her two sons. Elimelech, the head of the home, the breadwinner, Naomi's life partner, the one whom the family's inheritance and land and name in Israel is all wrapped up in. And what happens to him? He dies. He seems to be the instigator of this move to Moab. It's Elimelech who brings his family. And he's gone. And the narrator just builds this growing sense of confusion. Again, no details are given about what happens to Elimelech. We don't know why or how he dies. It just breaks suddenly into the narrative. Elimelech's gone. He's been in charge. He's the one who brings them to Moab. What are they going to do now as they navigate their grief in a foreign land, an enemy land? The first blow, Elimelech dies. The second blow, the sons marry Moabite women. Look at verse 4. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah and the name of the other Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. The sons don't do what the patriarchs of old did. They don't return among God's people to find a wife. No, they look around Moab and they marry pagan wives, unbelieving wives. They're foolish. And throughout the Old Testament, every time God's people intermarry with the nations around them, they're led into idolatry. They're led into sin. The Moabites were not even allowed into the sanctuary, into the assembly of God's people, because they would have corrupted them. Naomi has spiritually wayward children who become involved with pagan wives. Those sons now probably have no interest in ever going back to Israel. They're living their lives in pagan Moab. The second blow, the sons marry Moabite women. There's a third blow here. There's no children. You could miss it. There's a little detail in a narrative that's sparse of detail. There's a little detail at the end of verse 4. They lived there about 10 years. It's strange, isn't it? In a narrative that doesn't give you any detail about how Elimelech or dies or anything else, this little detail's there. They live there for 10 years. And the inference is that in those 10 years of marriage, There is no offspring. There's no sons. There's no babies to carry on the family line, to claim the family inheritance in Israel. You see, 10 years in Scripture seem to be a period of time in a marriage before a lack of children seemed to be a permanent thing. In Genesis 16, remember the life of Abraham? God had promised Abraham that he would have a son, that his line would continue, and yet nothing is happening. And it's after that same period of time, 10 years of living in Cana, that Sarah begins to take things into her own hands. And she brings her maidservant to Abraham and says, "Have a son through my maidservant." The inference being that the period of time has passed that she would expect to have a child herself. Listen to Genesis 16, 1-3. "Now Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children. She had a female Egyptian servant whose name was Hagar. And Sarah said to Abram, 'Behold, now the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my servant. It may be that I shall obtain children by her.' And Abram listened to the voice of Sarah." So after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarah, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her servant, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as wife. So as the Old Testament reader reads here in Ruth 1, they lived there for 10 years. It's important. There is little prospect of this family line continuing. Elimelech is gone. The sons are married. But there's no continuing of the family line. Their family line, their inheritance, will die with these sons. Then they get to their fourth blow in Moab, the death of the two sons. Verse 5. "Both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband." The sons die in Moab. And again, it's so sudden in this narrative. There's no detail. There's no explanation. There's just this growing cloud of grief and loss and brokenness in this woman's life. Now she's left alone to grieve in a foreign land. She's lost absolutely everything. They're all gone. And soon their name, their family, their inheritance will be forgotten. Bible Speaks Today series on Ruth says this. It says, "In the Hebrew way of thinking, to know a person's name is to know his character, to know him. The name is the person. When a person's name is destroyed or cut off, the person is extinguished from human memory. It's as though he had never been. How devastating, therefore, for Naomi, that not only has she lost the three men of her household, but there is no heir by which their names will be continued and their inheritance guaranteed. Her men had died, and so had their names." Her men had died, and so had their names. And Naomi's left, living at the time of the judges, uprooted in a pagan land, far from home, among her enemies. She loses her husband. She's plunged into widowhood. She sees her sons going down wayward paths. She realizes after 10 years of their marriages that that's the end of her family line is coming on the horizon. And then she loses her two sons. And in her grief and her loss, she knows her family inheritance, her family name, her family line will stop with her. She's left an old widow in a foreign land with no one to protect her, with no one to provide for her, and with absolutely no hope for the future. And we can sympathize with Naomi's reaction, can't we? Why are you doing this, God? Where's the plan? I'm one of your people. I call you Yahweh. She still calls him Yahweh, the covenant name of God. Why are you against me? Why have you brought all this tragedy to me? And as she heads back to Bethlehem at the end of chapter 1, after all her suffering, and as she tries to get Orpah and Ruth to go back to their families in Moab, she says it's because she's exceedingly bitter against the Lord. And as she returns to Bethlehem and she trods that familiar path and she comes back into her hometown with all those happy memories ruined by what has happened to her, and as the whole town is stirred in verse 19, is it Naomi? Is she back after all these years? Probably about 12 years has gone past. Is it her? And there's almost an air of celebration. And they say in verse 19, is it Naomi? Is it the pleasant one? And as the biting irony of her name hits her ears, she explodes. Do not call me that name. Do not call me Naomi. My name's not Naomi anymore. My name is Mara. My name is Bitter. Because that's who I am now. That is how I feel. God has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full. Yes, there was a famine, but I had everything leaving Bethlehem. Yahweh, my God, the God I'm in covenant with, he has brought me back to this place empty. He's against me. His hand is against me. And the Bible is so real to our lives. It doesn't brush over human suffering and questions and emotions that we have towards God. And Naomi is not alone. If you read the Psalms, time and time again, they cry out to God asking, why, God? Psalm 10, verse 1, why, O Lord, do you stand far away? Why do you hide yourself in time of trouble? Psalm 13, verse 1 and 2, how long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Psalm 88, verses 3 to 7, for my soul is full of troubles and my life draws near to Sheol. I am counted among those who go down to the pit. I am a man who has no strength, like one set loose among the dead, like the slain that lie in the grave, like those whom you remember no more, for they are cut off from your hand. You have put me in the depths of the pit, in the regions dark and deep. Your wrath lies heavy upon me, and you overwhelm me with all your waves. When we suffer, when calamity strikes, when tragedy tears our hearts to shreds, we turn to God and our hearts cry out, why? And we try to fathom a reason. What have I done? Am I cursed? And the anger can be there and the bitterness can be found. And there are many who end up in the place of Naomi, the place of bitterness towards life and bitterness towards God, where the blame is left at God's door, where faith falters, where faithfulness fails, and they give up on God and they walk away. And as we come to a close this morning, and as we leave Naomi till next week, the question for us is, when we face the calamities of life, how do we find faith in the famine? And I just want to apply this in a few ways very quickly this morning. Firstly, we need to address our feelings. We need to address our feelings. It seems very unspiritual to have some of those feelings, doesn't it? When we're struggling and suffering, it can be all too easy to push those feelings down, particularly those that we think we can't have. I can't be angry. I can't be asking these questions. I can't admit that I'm questioning God or I'm feeling angry with God. How unspiritual, how unchristian. But when those feelings are there, pushing them down deep doesn't deal with them. We need to do what the psalmist does. We need to take those feelings to the Lord in a reverent way, and we need to wrestle with him with them. And we need to let his words speak into where our hearts are at. And at times we need to confide. We need to talk to those we trust who can speak into our Christian lives in love and support when we're struggling. We need to address our feelings. Secondly, how do we apply this? How do we find faith in the famine? Well, we need to see the glints of hope in the darkness. The glints of hope in the darkness. In the midst of Naomi's grief and despair, we still see glints of hope in this story. In 1 verse 6, we didn't read it, but as Naomi returns to Bethlehem, she returns because she hears that Yahweh has visited his people and given them food. And Naomi in Moab, in her mourning, in her bitterness, hears that her God has been faithful to others, and she returns to the promised land. And she could have so easily died in bitterness in Moab, but she hears of God's faithfulness and she comes home. Verse 22, He came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. And of course, knowing the story of Ruth, that barley harvest is going to be so important. But it's a time of harvest in Israel, a new beginning, a potential provision for Ruth and Naomi. There's a glimpse of hope in this story. And we need to see the glimpse of hope. In the darkness and despair of suffering, we need to hold on to the glimpse of hope. It might be a little text from a friend when you're feeling low. It might be a person who comes to encourage and pray with you. It might be those little signs that God is at work. When we suffer, we cling to them. They're a glimpse of hope. How else do we find faith in the famine? When we need to address our feelings, we need to see the glimpse of hope. We also need to cling to faith in a sovereign God. We need to cling to faith in a sovereign God. It's interesting, even in the depths of how Naomi feels in her bitterness, she still holds on to one thing, her belief in a sovereign God. Did you see it? Though she's bitter and angry, she knows that Yahweh is still on the throne. He's the Almighty. He's in control. And when we find ourselves in the place of Naomi, we need to cling to the sovereignty of our God. When our world falls apart and we don't know what he is doing, even when we're angry with him for what is happening, knowing that we'll never understand what is going on in this life, we can have faith in his sovereignty. And we can believe that he loves us. And we can know that he never forsakes us. Stephen reminded us this morning, the gracious care of our God. We have faith in a sovereign God. And finally, how do we apply this? When we feel forsaken, we remember the one who was forsaken for us. The one who came from perfection and glory to this broken, sinful world. The one who was at the very center of his Father's will. The one whom his Father said, "This is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased." And yet he cries out from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me?" He's forsaken by his Father. He's left in darkness to die on a cross. And the wrath of his Father is poured out upon him. And he did it to save you. And he did it to save me. And when we feel forsaken, we remember the one who was forsaken for us. We can find faith in the famine. Naomi would find faith in the famine, and so can we. Let's pray together.